You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. This is episode number 45. G'day everyone and welcome to today's episode of the Piano Teaching Podcast with me, Tim Topham. Thank you very much for tuning in wherever you are around the world and whatever you're doing. I really appreciate that you've decided to stick my voice in your ears and hopefully get some very cool and inspirational ideas for your teaching for the coming few weeks. Today's episode is an absolute ripper. I can't wait to share this one with you because my guest today, Vashti Somerville, is basically one of the coolest people I've ever met. And she not only is just doing a normal interview today, but she went to the trouble of getting her students along, and she's actually going to demonstrate and give us a walkthrough tour of her studio, which is really important because today's topic is all about using ORF to teach rhythm. Now, if you're not sure what ORF is all about, you're obviously going to find out. But basically, it's an approach that a lot of classroom teachers particularly use to teach rhythm in particular. But Vashti's using it with group and individual students in her studio setting and also with piano. And so we talk about the crossover and relationship between teaching rhythm and how it can be taught using this method and also merging it onto the piano. I'm also really excited to let you know that we've put together a fantastic download for this episode, and it's actually a cheat sheet, two-page cheat sheet of Vashti's links of all the equipment that she tends to use in her studio. And we've even gone to the trouble, or she's actually gone to the trouble, of linking up those instruments to where she buys them online. So this is going to be a fantastic resource. If you're not sure about where to start or what instruments to get, you can actually grab this cheat sheet from the show notes page and you can download it, print it out and actually go through, or actually don't even print it out, just click the links and go and buy what you need to get started. And you can just start really small with a couple of rhythm sticks and a couple of drums or a tambourine. You'll see what she does. She's got an amazing vibe and an amazing method, and I think you're going to absolutely love it. So if you want to grab the download, that's going to be at timtopham.com/episode45. That's episode and the number 45. And as usual, if you're enjoying these episodes, it would mean a heap to me if you could spend the 5 minutes it'll take to go and write a review on iTunes. If you've not done this before and you've listened to a few episodes, then please take the time. I really do appreciate it, and I do read all the reviews. To find out how to do that, it's really easy, but you can head to timtopham.com/iTunes to get the details about how to do that. Thank you very much also to the people who responded to my podcast survey. I've got well over 100 or almost 200 responses there, so I've got lots of great ideas of what is going to help you the most in your teaching when it comes to these podcasts. I'm really glad, I must say, about how positive everyone was. I think we ended up with 4.7 stars out of 5 as the average. So that means a lot to me. I'm glad you're enjoying them. And I hope I can continue providing immense value for you. And I know that we're going to kick it off today with this episode. Let me give you a really quick rundown about Vashti. She considers it her life's work to build community through the arts and to facilitate creative experiences for people of all ability levels. How about that for a goal in life? I love it. She has an extensive performance as well as teaching and directing background. She currently owns and operates Open Door Music Studio, where she teaches voice, piano, Music Together Big Kids, and marimba and drum percussion ensemble. Vashti holds a Bachelor of Arts in Music from Mesa State College in Grand Junction, Colorado. I hope I said that right, guys. Correct me if I'm wrong. And a Master's of Music and Vocal Performance from Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington. She also has an Idaho Elementary Teaching Certificate with a K-12 Music Endorsement, an ORF Level 1 Certificate, World Music Drumming Level 1, and is a trained Music Together teacher. Sometimes when it comes to music education, you know, pieces of paper like that are great, but when you check out the vibe that Vashti has going and the things that she's doing, it almost really doesn't matter. She's just an incredibly talented teacher, creative, innovative, and inspirational, and I can't wait for you to meet her. Here is my interview with Vashti Somerville. So Vashti, I'm so glad you could come on the podcast today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I've been actually wanting to talk to someone about this idea of ORF for quite a while. Now, it sounds like the weirdest kind of thing to say and everything. So firstly, what's with the weird name? And what does Orff Schulwerk actually mean?
Okay, so Orff Schulwerk literally means Orff schoolwork. So Schulwerk in German is schoolwork.
Okay.
And Orff is Karl Orff, the composer who he composed Carmina Burana, is one of his most famous compositions. So some people might know that. So he's sort of the founder of the Orff Schulwerk or schoolwork.
Okay, cool. So what is the approach, the Orff approach, just in a nutshell? I know there's probably lots of depth you could go into, but as an overview, what's it all about?
Okay. So you said the right word by calling it an approach. It's a philosophy. It is not a method. And there's a quote by Karl Orff that I think really sums up what it's about. And the quote goes, "Tell me, I forget. Show me, I remember. Involve me, I understand." So it's a very, very hands-on approach. And it starts with what children do best, and that's play. They instinctively imitate, experiment, reinvent, and improvise, and all these wonderful things when given the environment to do that. I have to just pull up another set of notes here, Tim. I'm so sorry.
Totally fine. I had the pleasure of meeting one of Vashti's friends at the MTNA, and she was talking about some of the stuff that you do and your studio, and we're actually going to have a look around your studio. You've got some students here ready to demonstrate some things. I cannot wait for this. So if you're actually listening to this on iTunes, then I actually suggest you're welcome to keep listening, but make sure you jump online to timtopham.com and find the actual show notes page for this episode, because you're going to be wanting to watch the video for this episode for sure, right?
Right. Okay. Found my other notes.
Okay, cool.
So a big tenet of the Orff approach is that music is inseparable from movement, dance, speech, and drama. They're all connected. So that's one big part of it.
You take a kid and you sit them at the piano and that's what they do and then they leave. It's like piano is just one aspect
of
music. My students,
they're shaking their head like, we don't do that. No, it is definitely you're using your whole body to deconstruct and reconstruct music and understand it from a lot of different approaches. And hopefully, you know, all learners are different. So hopefully one way will connect with each learner. And I do all group instruction, so that's especially important. And it also, you know, a major belief, which I know a lot of your viewers and a lot of the people I've heard on your podcast also believe this, you know, the belief that all human beings are born musical, are born with musical aptitude and the ability to reach musical achievement. So that's another big tenet of it. And that's sort of it in a nutshell.
It sounds great. And so you made it a point of saying that it's not a method, it is an approach. What do you see as being the difference between those two things?
Well, I think of a method as something that's sort of a prepackaged, here's a scope and sequence that take you from A to Z, and these are the steps you follow. Whereas an approach is, here's our philosophy, and we value your creativity as a teacher, and you're going to sort of take who you are and use this philosophy and whatever inspires you to make it all work.
Great.
So it's not a prepackaged curriculum that will get you from here to here. It's just not like that.
Right. But there are, I assume, set activities or recommended music to play and things to do and instruments to use. Is that right?
Yeah, there are. A lot of the beginning music is very pattern-based and not complex in form, and uses ostinato a lot. Do you know what that is?
So repeating patterns, I guess.
Yeah, repeated musical patterns, which works really great in ensemble play. And I think what's unique, you know, this in the world of general music education in public schools, this is very familiar stuff. A lot of teachers use the Orff approach. And I started in a public school, and that's where I found out about this. I don't think a lot of people in private teaching world know much about this or have considered incorporating some of these instruments for ensemble play. And we'll take a tour and see all those in a while.
Absolutely. Okay, so, and yes, I'm familiar with that from my own school that I teach at. They have the marimbas and they do an orph approach, I think. It certainly looks and sounds like what I understand to be orph. I'll know more about it at the end of this, I think.
Well, I've seen interviews with people, I can't remember their names, but the Forte school that you interviewed.
Yes.
Two people, and that's Paul, it's all very similar. You seem to interview a lot of people who are incorporating really non-traditional things in their studio, which is great.
It's so much fun, isn't it?
So much.
So do you only kind of teach with this approach now, or do you still have the more traditional, some more traditional piano lessons, or perhaps for more advanced students, they still have a more traditional approach, or is it all this approach?
It's kind of all this approach. My studio is very non-traditional. My kids do not do competitions or testing or anything like that. But I don't know what it would mean to say I'm just an ORF teacher. I think I'm a conglomerate of so many encounters with so many different creative people and experiences, and I just use whatever works, and that's constantly evolving for me. And I think to say I was a purist for ORF would really be contradictory to what it is either, also, because it's just a philosophy that, you know, says all of us, you know, creativity begins from within each of us, and it's just different for different people. So I don't think I could say that I just do one thing. And it's always changing.
I get it, and I'm totally with you. Like, I like using, that's why I like doing the podcast. I like using I'll use a bit of this, and I'll use a bit of that, and take a bit of this, and that's my approach, I guess.
Well, you'd start to bore yourself after a while.
Totally. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, 100%. So do you have to be trained to use this approach?
So there aren't rules per se that say you have to have a training to start incorporating the philosophy. I mean, you can attend local workshops, and we can talk about resources for that later, and just get some ideas to start bringing in. Or, you know, if you wanted to become a certified or be able to say you're certified in ORF, they have levels training. So you can go through three different levels. Those are usually summer trainings that are a couple of weeks long. And they're definitely, they dive into the pedagogy a lot more deeply, in the history and that kind of stuff. But if you attend a local, I know Australia has a big association, and if you attend local workshops, I've been to workshops that have Dalcro specialists, Kodai specialists, you know, dance and movement specialists. So it's just a big mix of intersecting worlds. It's really fun.
Yeah, but you don't have to sort of be certified with a stamp to use these elements. So teachers watching who like some of the things you show us today, it's like, yeah, go for it. Do it. Yeah.
I think, it's a philosophy.
Yeah. No, that sounds great. So does it kind of, can piano teachers use it in a piano studio if they don't have a whole lot of extra equipment and things? Can they use this approach on the keyboard?
Definitely. And I don't know how many of your viewers teach group lessons. I think it depends. You can do a lot more of this when you have a small group. Mm. My group size is average 5. And, you know, with some of the activities that we'll demonstrate with my lovely students sitting over here in a few minutes, I'll show you some very inexpensive little things that you can bring into your studio to, like, the whole enchilada when we take the tour, you'll see. And so I think it just depends on who you are as a teacher and what you want to do, what you invest and bring into your studio, but definitely a lot of it transfers to the keyboard.
Great. I really loved, I found a quote on your website about how you teach piano, and it says, Open Door, which is the name of your studio, uses a unique and non-traditional method to learn to play the piano. We approach it a lot like learning a new language. Students learn to play first and then begin reading and writing later. We acknowledge that music notation is only one way to communicate and learn music. So we work to develop oral and improvisationary skills and the ability to create original music in addition to being able to eventually read music. And for me, this sits really well with my own approach. It's about, and this is the music learning theory of Dr. Gordon approach as well.
Yes.
You should learn to speak the language, i.e. understand patterns and rhythm before you try and read it and then eventually write it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love, there's a book, and I've typed a page of resources out for you. I know you include a page oftentimes with your podcast. Mm. So I have a list of things. And one of the books that I put on there was Eric Bluestein, The Ways Children Learn Music. And he's sort of simplified Gordon's music learning theory. It's a pretty easy read compared to, you know, some of those things are weighty and harder to get through. But that book was really a great book for me and was really also in alignment with the ORF philosophy. Great.
I'll enjoy reading that one too.
Yeah.
And so what ages and levels does it suit?
The ORF approach? Anybody. I would use this, you know, there's a choir project that I have here in Boise called the Boise Intergenerational Choir. So we call it the acronym BIG, Big Choir for short. And it's, you know, I use this approach with the smallest of kids up to, you know, we have 90-year-olds in the choir who don't view themselves as musical. And this way of teaching works with everyone.
Yeah, great. And what do you see as the biggest advantage of this approach?
So absolutely just the freedom to create and build community through this ensemble play. I think that, you know, it's great sometimes to go and play your instrument by yourself and have some solitude and do that. But one of the greatest parts of being a musician is getting the opportunity to make music with other people. So, you know, that's to me the biggest benefit of it.
Mm. And
which is also why I love group lessons. But
And a lot of when I was interviewing people about group lessons, which was our theme in March, and we're doing some kind of summer camps in April, a lot of them talked about the impact of the community forming that group lessons and group teaching has. It brings a whole new dimension to this idea of piano education in particular.
Oh, it definitely does. And a lot of times when we do jams at the end of a piano class, parents or siblings who happen to be in the room will pick up an instrument and play, and it's really, really fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And it adds that connection, and kids want to come because they want to hang out with their friends as well as learn music.
Yeah.
Like, there's heaps of benefits, isn't there?
And they feel like they're in a band, or, you know, it's just fun to jam. And I was going to go back, you talked about delaying reading. I wanted to say that, you know, reading is definitely a valuable tool that you need in your toolbox or your musical Lego kit or whatever you have that, you know, you can always draw on to generate music. But I tell the kids, you know, if you take a piece of sheet music, there's not a lot of creativity that goes into reading that. There's some expressive elements that you can add. But being able to rearrange it, restyle it, reimagine it, embellish it, all those things, that's what's really creative. Mm. I think those skills are equally as important as reading. And, you know, another person that I just really am so grateful I had the opportunity to spend some time with him and at a conference in San Diego, and I think he recommended me for this, is Bradley Sowash. And I think all of his materials are also very much in alignment with this approach, and the way he teaches improvisation is so amazing. I want to be able to study with him myself. Mm. So there's a lot of people doing this really, I think, innovative work, and the field needed it, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a movement, I think there feels like a groundswell, a bit of a movement moving in that direction now towards let's get more creative, let's do some more improvising. It's not such a bizarre concept anymore, I don't think. I think this has only happened in the last 5 or so years.
I do too. And you met my husband, Chad, earlier. He's helping with the technical parts on our end. And he's also a musician. And we met in music college, and we've spoke quite a bit about how you kind of feel like gypped a little bit from going to Ping for all these music degrees, and no one ever let you improvise or taught you anything about it in formal training. That's how my training was. I don't know about yours.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to reinvent myself and create a different environment in the studio for my students. And it's hard when you didn't grow up doing it that way. It's different, you know, we were definitely in a box, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. No, in music education over here is the same as I think it is in the States in many ways.
Yeah.
It's very traditional. My worry is that, you know, these students end up being incredible performers. They finish university, but there's no performing jobs out there. It's not a role that you can do now. So what skills are we giving them that are actually going to be useful to them in the future? That's what I would question.
And I think also this approach really leads them to be lifelong music makers for the joy of it, not necessarily because they want to be on a competition track or, you know, just they want to be able to make music with people in their living room for their lifetime.
Makes sense to me, Vashti.
Yeah.
I love that concept. Reading is just one tool in your toolkit. I think it's a great approach. All right. I can't wait to see some. We've got to get into action. So what would you like to do?
I know they're going
to
fall asleep. Should we get them up and do some stuff?
Yeah, let's do it. Totally.
So this could be a little shaky moving the computer around, but Chad's going to do his best.
Cool.
So how about why don't I start with some of the gross motor rhythm warm-ups that we do that I think front load students for not only reading, but just great expressive playing later. Should we just start with a few of those?
Perfect. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Girls.
Well, you better introduce your girls because
they won't come up here before. Come up here. Okay. So this is Cece.
Hey, Cece.
And her big sister, Livy, who agreed to come in and help today.
Hi, Livy.
And then this is Amelia.
Hi, Amelia.
And these all three of them are in piano classes, and then these two are also voice students of mine. So
brilliant. Thanks so much, girls, for helping out. I can't wait to see what we're going to do.
Okay.
Let's
so let me grab. So, Tim, I'm not as close to the microphone, so you have to let me know.
No, I can hear you perfectly. It's all good.
Okay. So these are finger cymbals. Okay. Mm-hmm. So one of the really beginning activities, and girls, let's put you on the carpet up there. Let's see if we can see them all.
Yep.
There we go.
Yep.
So I play this little thing called how many sounds in a beat or how many beats in a sound. So I just get them listening. You know, I might even actually, Chad, can you keep a beat on a drum for me? Because I don't think they can hear my foot stomp. So Chad's going to get a beat going. Okay, girls, so you're gonna tell me how many sounds in each beat. Okay. Two. Okay. Good, okay. Did that kind of make good sense, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
So then you say, when you want to do notes of longer duration, you know, how many beats and a sound. So we'll get the beat going again, Chad. Okay. How many beats is this sound covering?
Two.
Three. One, two, three. I tricked you with that. So you can do, you know, dotted halves, half notes, quarter, or whole notes that way, even before you label it that. So that's kind of I love these finger cymbals for that reason. So the next step I would do with that is to, if they sit on the floor, can you see them? Can
yes.
you guys sit? Okay.
Out of interest, Vashti, why don't you go with clapping or tapping? Why do you find the instrument is a good idea?
With that, just for them to start to orally figure out, you know, beat related to sounds in a beat or how many beats a sound takes, just those finger cymbals having that sustain.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
On those, right? Because when you're clapping, you can't really clap a sustained note. You can demonstrate it maybe by a motion, but it's just not the same as that sustain with that. So the second step with this is I would have the girls, they would get the beat, patting the beat on there. Now, verbally, they're just going to use syllables like bum, 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 or dee, 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 dee. And I want you guys to fit one sound in a beat. Here we go. Bum, bum, bum. All together, bum, 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 bum. Change to two. Here we go. Bum, 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 bum. Change to four. Here we go. Bum, 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 bum. And now what they've just experienced, Tim, is they feel what that feels like in their body to what is two against one, what is four against one. I mean, you can do it with threes. And, you know, this process unfolds over several weeks. It's not usually this quick, right? So then the next step, just because it starts to get fun and ensemble-y, is I will have them grab an instrument. So, you know, I'll classify things as woods, metals, skins, or shakers. Skins being drums. Mm-hmm. And you want them to choose something, have different timbres. And I'll show you what we do now. So why don't you get on the box drum. Cece, why don't you get the temple blocks that are on top of that thing called off. And Libby, for now, you do shakers. And then we're going to trade this up, okay? Okay, can you still see them, Tim? Okay. So I have the metal. Libby has shakers. Cece has wood, and she's got the cajon. It's not really a skin. It's a little different kind of a sound, but we'll go with that. So I'm going to keep a beat, and you guys are going to fit one sound in a beat. Here we go. Everybody, one, snatch the beat. Change to two. You're going to do the single sounds. You're doing the twos. So notice I'm not labeling them. These guys read and they know now, but I'm not labeling things as quarter notes, eighth notes, anything. Now. It's just something that they can relate to and experience. Mm-hmm. And Livy, you're going to be the fours. So alternating one, two, three, four. Okay. So let's try it. And you're the twos, right? And you're the ones. All right, here we go. One, two, three, four.
So it's like having your own drum kit, like making up a drum kit beat.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a drum school. And then I would probably rotate that around, and you know, they would each get to experience the feeling of doing the ones, the twos, or the fours. I don't start with triplets right away, but then later they'll experience that. And we don't ever do like triplets against that, like in the beginning, doing the three against two is pretty hard for them. But you could hear by them having a different timbre, it did give it that cool drum circle feel, and you could really hear the difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's so great. Yeah, so you know, we started with just the finger cymbals, transferred that to them doing a little body percussion with speech, so they felt it within their body, and then transferred it to the instruments. Now, you could, you know, a teacher could play a chord progression, and they could just do like a single note on the keyboard against this, and you could transfer, you know, singles, doubles, or fours to a keyboard with a single note or with maybe, you know, like a five note scale.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. I like that as an idea. Particularly, I mean, instead of sort of, okay, clap along with me, instead of doing that, you could play a chord progression, and okay, you're going to play on beat one, and then you're going to play two notes per beat. Great idea.
Yeah. Exactly, and that gets them familiar with these instruments, and a lot of times down the road I'll let them create ostinatos. So if they're listening to another student in class play a piano piece, they're not just sitting there spacing out, they're actively participating by adding a percussion part of something. So that works really well. So that's kind of how what I call how many sounds in a beat, how many beats in a sound evolves over several weeks.
It's great.
Okay, so want me to go on to another one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so as you notice, though, I mean, you can buy things like maracas and shakers and sticks for fairly inexpensive, and we'll put that on a resource sheet. Now, here's another thing I bet most piano teachers don't have in their studio, racquetballs.
No. Okay,
so get your racquetball, girls. Okay. All right. So, stand with this. I'll get a hand drum. And I might use a mallet or just, you know, use my hand. This is really an exercise that is helping them keep track of where they are in a measure. But I'm not even calling it a measure right now. I'll tell them I'm either doing beats in cycles of three or four. So they're getting to understand a duple feel and a triple feel.
Yeah.
Okay. So, which the triple one's really hard. It's lopsided. They don't have a lot of the pop music they listen to. None of it's very little of it is in triple feel.
True.
Okay. So we are going to start with cycles of four. I get four beats all to myself, and then you get to join bouncing your racquetball only on beat one, okay? And you want to sound like one person dropping one ball. That's how accurate you want to be. So you have to adjust your distance or your force if you're off. And the other thing that this leads to is it prepares them for anacrusis or pickup, like a preparatory beat. Like we all, right? Okay. Okay, so I get four beats alone. You're on beat one. Add beat three with it. Hold. This time, beat three only. I get four all by myself, and then your cycle starts. So you have to wait a lot of counts. Hold, beat two. Put Chad on the spot. Chad's gonna go to the piano and play some kind of blues thing. Two, three, four.
Blues.
Like a left hand, open, close, open. Okay, all right, good. So I might
pull
a student to the piano, and if we're working on 12-bar blues, they might play some kind of something in their repertoire while the kids are playing the racquetballs. And then we've kind of done a found sound percussion fun thing too. But the point of that is keeping track of where you are in a measure and really learning about preparation or anacrusis pickup.
Really important. That was fantastic. And of course the girls here are all pros at it, I'm sure. I know anyway. So obviously this would, you know, there would be balls on the floor and people missing beats.
Yeah, exactly.
You girls are too good.
They're really good at it, right? And then I do it in three. And when we're in three, I usually just have them bounce on beat one or beat three. And if you want to have them do beat one and three, I usually divide the group in two, and half will be beat one, half will be beat three. It's too hard to do that three, one.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's really important to do triple meter activities whenever you can also.
Yeah. What a great little idea. I mean, any of us can use that tomorrow. That's a cool idea. Yeah.
And that's like what I was hoping with this is to give teachers something they can put in their in their studios right away. So,
and can one of the girls bring up the ball to the camera so we can all look at one?
The plain racquetball. Look at them.
So it's quite, is it quite spongy?
Squeeze them, girl.
Oh, perfect. That's great. Thanks, girls.
Okay, so I have one more gross motor warm-up that we can do. And this one, it deals with really internalizing phrase length. And then it leads really into freeing yourself up for improvisation. So do you want me to continue?
Yeah, let's do it.
For time? Okay,
yep.
So this is question answer. Okay, and this is how this starts. So a very orf thing to do is you start with speech and then you transfer it to body percussion and then transfer it to an instrument. And I'll use this, you probably do this in your studio too. Tricky passage, you need to be able to sing it or say it. If you can't sing it or say it, you can't play it, right? Or audiate it. Do you know the term audiation,
sure.
Right?
Sure, yeah. So thinking that's just,
And, you know, if I have a group, I have a piano lab in the back, I'll show you, you know, if they're playing a piece and it maybe it has a little syncopation in it and the group is just not aligned, then I make them sing it while they're doing it. And if they're not singing it out loud, I say, you better be singing it in your head, and it cleans it up every time.
Cool.
So this, I kind of got off on that, but
we'll try. It's great.
So this is question answer. And I always start out with really simple. I just say, what's your name? So I want you and you three to tell me how many beats that question takes up. What's your name?
Two beats.
Two beats. So your answer can be two beats, okay? So we'll start with Amelia. She could say, hers is, let's start with Livy. Amelia's has a little pickup in it. So Livy, or my name is Livy.
Ah, yeah, cool.
She could say, what's your middle name, Livy? Livy Lou. Or I don't want to use her last name online. I'll use mine.
No, yeah, sure.
If last name was Somerville. She could say Livy Somerville. So there's a lot of ways. And, you know, if you turned any of those speech patterns into a rhythm on an instrument, they would be cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I'm just going to start by speaking, and I'll start with you. What's your name?
Livy.
Talk loud. What's your name?
Livy.
What's your name? Okay, did you hear?
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, yeah.
So now, once again, this process would unfold over a lot of weeks. Now I'm going to say, we're going to do the same. Do you like how you did it? Do you want to change it? Mm-hmm. You want to change it? Okay, one more chance. Ready? What's your name?
Lily.
What's your name? What's your name?
My name's Amelia.
So they did them the same.
Yeah.
Now this, say it while you clap it. So you're clapping all the syllables, essentially. What's your name?
Lizzie.
What's your name?
Casey.
What's your name?
My name's Amelia.
Okay, you picked a tricky one, right? Now I'm gonna say audiate what you did while you clap it. So the sound goes in your head, the words go in your head now. We're turning off the voice. All right, ready? Okay, So you have a circle and you would keep that going. Then you take it one step further and you do question, answer, question, echo. And I would ask the question, Livy gives the answer. I ask the question again. They have to echo what Livy did. So they have to retain whatever her pattern was while I'm asking the question again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, make sense?
Yep.
So just do this, you just for now, okay? Okay, ready? Okay, now they really understand what a two-beat phrase is, the way, you know, with the beat I was just keeping. They get that. So now they're just going to improvise two beats, okay?
Okay.
So
yeah.
I just say something else, okay? Improvising that, right?
Yeah, the Skype just decided to go a bit funny on those, but we get the idea. So
you get the idea.
Yeah.
Now the way you could then take that to the piano immediately, and I'll just do a really quick thing. We could do just question answer over the 12-bar blues using just C as their the note they're going to improvise on. So for just a minute, how about a million CC? Find a C here, and you'll probably just be able to hear it, maybe not see it. CC. Okay, so you're gonna ask the question, she's gonna do the answer. And it's, ready? Yeah, ready, set, just a C note, go. Ask another. So you get the idea.
Mm.
So it's like they were clapping, but they're doing it on one note, and it starts to become a little more musical.
Then
you could add more notes. But that's just kind of the process for how that activity extends.
I really like it. Let me just pause for 1 second. I think we've lost my webcam on the recording. I'm just going to turn off my camera and turn it back on again, so don't freak out when I disappear.
but
I just also, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you.
Yeah. I just also wanted to say, there we go, I think I'm back now, that I really love that concept of you speak the rhythm, yeah. and use words because that's easy. And like the name one, yes. I reckon that's great. Then audiate it. So think what you're saying while you're clapping it, yeah. and then take it to the instrument. Brilliant. I think that's something we can all use. I'm going to use it today, yeah. or this week.
Okay, good. Good.
All right. Now, have you got some other bits and pieces?
Sure. So that, I guess... those were kind of rhythm, gross motor warm-ups that are just fun. And like I said, then front load them very effectively for reading because they're really successful later when you connect a lot of what we just did to written representation. They get it like that because they've had all those experiences. And this kind of relates to who was the gentleman you had on? Paul Harris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The simultaneous learning.
Uh-huh.
It's very similar to that. I loved that podcast and I love that book. So it's similar, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. The concept of giving upskilling before you actually start learning a piece or whatever. Yeah,
upskilling.
Totally.
That's a new word. Yeah. I like that. So I could, maybe now is a good time to actually do a studio tour.
Yes, I'd love to see it because I've heard about some particularly interesting things you've got here. Everyone's talking about. We've got it.
Well, how about this? We'll save the most interesting one for very last, and then we'll actually get the girls on some of these. We'll start. We'll walk back. There's a piano lab. The lighting is not so good. I had a little lighting issue this week, but you'll get the idea. It's a piano lab. Okay, so we're follow me.
Good steady cam, Chad. I'm impressed.
Right? Here's your car. You should come. Dropping the mic. Okay. All right.
Wow, this is a proper. Did you build this room, or is it part of your house? Or?
Oh no, I rent a commercial space. I'm downtown where I live, and I rent a commercial space, so I don't know.
Yeah, we can see. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so there's 2, 4, 5.
Five. There's five. Yeah. In here. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is kind of tricky on Skype. Okay, so now we're going to go. We're walking back through what is my office back to the main room here.
This is great. This is why I love video podcasts. We can actually explore.
Okay. So, big part of ORF, I'm going to tell you that. A lot of times it is associated, I can't see you, hello, with there, I'm going to do that. Is that better?
That's better.
It's associated with xylophones, metallophones, glockenspiels in a general music setting. You know, that they became kind of an outgrowth of ORF's work. And, you know, they're gross motor with mallets. And so some of the instruments that were developed, the bars were removable. Mm-hmm. And hear them referred to as barred instruments because they have bars.
Yeah.
The reason for that, they all come in like a C diatonic scale, but they come with B flats and F sharps so that you can play and do improvisation in a pentatonic in C, F, and G. So that was the reason. For my studio, because this is not a general music classroom, I've chosen chromatic marimbas. They do not have removable bars. So mm-hmm. here's, I don't know if Chad can... Can you kind of see that, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so really easy for students to transfer piano patterns to these because it's, you know, it's like a piano keyboard with, you know, your flats and sharps up there. Looks the same, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I've heard that because the ORF approach uses sticks, it's more of a gross motor skill so people can improvise. I think Paul from Forte was talking, we were talking about this on a mastermind yesterday with my community. To get away from kids having to use the right finger shape and all this kind of stuff on the piano when they improvise early on, they can just use the right notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's using sticks. Different. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I have, this is a 3-octave chromatic. I have two of these and then I have a 4-octave one. So they're just kind of along the wall here.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then, of course, over here we have a shelf with all kinds of those small percussion instruments, the egg shakers, sticks, all that stuff. These are tubanos and they're just really sturdy drums that work in a setting where they take a lot of use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's the surprises. Okay, so this is
it's huge.
This one right here. I don't know if we can see where we are.
Yep.
This is a baritone. And
a what? Sorry, what's it called?
It's a baritone marimba.
Ah, right.
More in the like the African style marimbas, so it's just a C scale. And we have a friend that we approached. He has a woodworking shop, and we actually got this wood from a tree that was dying in the neighborhood. And,
oh, wow.
You know, we made this. His brother happens to be a music physicist, too, because there was a lot of music physics that went into that. But then this one wasn't low enough. So we built this guy. And I'm going to – actually, why don't you girls climb up there? All three of you.
This is what I've heard about.
Okay, so Livy wants me to tell you what we call it. We refer to that as Marimbasaurus Rex. Marimbasaurus is giant. You see that they had to step up on a step to get up there. And
yeah, if you happen to be listening to this episode, you need to jump on the video now to see the size of this marimba.
Yeah, you guys have to play. So you can kind of hear
that
it.
That is cool.
And this is me in front of it. It's huge. It's so tall.
Yeah.
So it's really, really fun, and we'll use it quite a bit for jams. We'll let students pick out bass parts when it works with the key on there, but it's really fun.
That's got such a beautiful resonance, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's really fun. So we can demonstrate a little jam with these if you want.
Yeah, that'll be cool. We'll need to start wrapping up soon, but I think that's a great way to kind of finish off.
Demonstrate a jam, and then you and I can wrap up.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Okay, how about we'll just do a blues jam? That's really fun. They love that, and it's really great for improvising. So how about, Cece, why don't you start out up there? And you're going to do the 12-bar blues pattern, CCCC, right? And then Livy is going to do something that Bradley Sowash taught me. Let me get it. She's going to play, we have all these nice instruments, but she's going to play a box. Can you see the box?
Yep.
And this was from Bradley Sowash, and he, you know, when you're doing a swing rhythm, he said to think of the words cheese doctor. So it's that transfer again, so cheese doctor, and he, you know, remember that? Okay, and then Amelia, she knows her blues, the minor blues scale, so she'll do that, and I'll go ahead and play like a bass part on the piano. And if we had more kids, I wouldn't play any of it. They would do it all. Okay, sit down with me. All right, Cece, are you ready? We'll do it one cycle through and then end rolling.
Four seasons.
Two. I'll call them out. Okay, ready? One, two, here we go. So we'll do that with all sorts of modes and keys, and it's really fun. So that gives you an idea.
And what could be less expensive than an old cardboard box?
Right. Yeah. I know you get these nice instruments and they fight over the box.
Oh, that was great. Thank you so much to the girls. You better get them up on camera again.
Come here, girls. Aren't they lovely?
Thank you so much. Take a bow. Thank you so much. Really, really good. Great work. Thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know if that kind of gave you an overview, a little taste of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just kind of in summary, because we're obviously there's mainly piano teaching audience. Have you got just like a couple of other tiny little things that you know work really well on the keyboard?
Yeah. I mean, I would just say doing that transfer always, like what we talked about, speaking, audiating, you know, or speaking and playing it, always doing that, it works great. We use a lot of singing in my studio. And, you know, getting them to jam, even if you just have one piano, we always get, you've done this, you know, you get several hands on that piano, invest in some just very basic small instruments and make sure that everyone is engaged or involve a parent, or even if you're doing a private lesson, they're getting that experience of having to keep a rhythm going on that piano because there's someone doing a percussion part with them. So they've really got to think of flow and expression and playing through something, and it can take away some of the pauses. So it's a really important part.
It's one of the reasons why I like just the simple 12-bar blues, getting the kids not only to do the improvising with some kind of blues scale, but also to do the chords and keep the steady beat while I improvise and try and throw them off just to see if they can keep that beat. I think it's really, really important. But I think probably the big thing that I've gained from this is just a real reminder, and I need to do it more, of the need to sing and hear and speak things before you take them to the instrument or to clapping or tapping. I think I'm going to work on.
Feel them in your body.
Yeah.
Getting the kids up and moving and doing a lot of work away from the piano bench to avoid just practicing mistakes over and over at the piano. If you do this front loading, then a lot of times they can go and play something pretty much perfect the first time. But if you're just, here's this piece of paper, sit down, we're going to read this, count this, it's not as successful.
Yeah, yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense, Vashti. Thank you so much for this. It has been so much fun. I've really enjoyed it. I know people are going to love watching it and seeing your energy and all your ideas. Now, you mentioned that you've got together a resource for us. So can you just tell us what that includes for teachers?
Sure. It'll have links to the ORF associations for the US, Australia, Canada, and the UK. And I'm sure that people in other countries could find one in their country as well. And there you can learn more about the history of ORF, find out about local trainings and workshops, as well as the levels trainings. I'll include a world music drumming link, which that's another really valuable training where you get to go and learn to work with drumming circles, which I think that skill works well in a piano studio setting later. And then I will include a list of sort of from the least expensive investment up to, if you decided that you wanted bigger instruments in your piano studio, just a list of products that I recommend that I've tried, and with the different timbres, a collection of woods, metals, skin shakers, that kind of thing.
Right.
And my favorite U.S. music ed kind of supply place is West Music. And I'll put a link, and that's all the products I've linked go through there pretty much. And so, but for people in Australia, I wouldn't know
That's okay.
You can get an idea.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, that is, brilliant.
I listed a couple books on there too, so I'll just get that emailed to you.
Great, great. All right, and I'll have the details. It'll be on the show notes page for today's episode. And where can people find out more about you and your studio?
My website is opendoormusicstudio.com.
Great. And there's a lot of your philosophies just jotted down there in small little bits, which I found. So really great to read. I'd encourage anyone to go there, see what you're all about. And if people have some questions, are you happy for me to shoot them through to you if they leave them on the show notes page?
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
That would be great. Vashti, it has been so awesome. I'm sorry we couldn't catch up at MTNA, but next time I'm over in the States, I'll have to come to Idaho, I guess.
Good place. Come visit.
That's it. All right. Thanks again. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you, Tim.
All right,
bye-bye. Bye.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.